That is Miley Cyrus, and Miley's currently starring in Woody Allen's new TV series, Crisis in Six Scenes. And of course, she's also a judge this season on The Voice. Thanks for listening to The Hits on VOA 1.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Alice Bryant, and Jill Robbins. We will also tell you what's trending today, and Anna Mateo will have this week's education report. But first, three British-born scientists have won the 2016 Nobel Prize for Physics. The Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences announced the award on Tuesday. The Academy is recognizing David J. Thewlis, F. Duncan Haldane, and J. Michael Kosterlitz for their work in topology, an advanced field of mathematics. Topology describes the properties of objects. Thewlis, aged 82, once taught at the University of Washington, but is now a professor emeritus. Haldane, 65, is a physics professor at Princeton University in New Jersey. Kosterlitz, 73, is a physics professor at Brown University in Rhode Island. The men launched their experiments in the 1970s. The Academy said their research projects brought about a new and unexpected understanding of the way solid materials behave. It said they also developed their own mathematical equations to explain the behaviors. In a statement, the Nobel judges said, "This year's laureates opened the door on an unknown world where matter can assume strange states. Thanks to their pioneering work, the hunt is now on for new and exotic phases of matter." The judges said there is hope that topological materials will help create new generations of electronics and superconductors. Haldane told reporters he was very surprised and very gratified to win the award. "A lot of tremendous new discoveries that are based on this original work are now happening." He added that the discoveries came by accident, which is often the case with science. "You stumble on it, and you have the luck to recognize what you found is something very interesting." The Associated Press spoke by telephone with Kosterlitz, who was in Finland. He said he was a little bit dazzled and still trying to take it in. The Nobel Prize for Physics comes with a monetary prize of $930,000, which is split among the winners. The Nobel laureates will also collect a medal and diploma at an award ceremony on December 10th. The first Nobel Prize of this year, for physiology or medicine, was announced Monday. That award went to Japanese scientist Yoshinori Osumi for experiments related to baker's yeast. Other Nobel Prizes will be announced this week and next week.
Facebook recently estimated that each of its users spends an average of 50 minutes a day on the company's online social network. But the company wants to find ways to increase the time spent on Facebook and two other services, Instagram and Messenger. A new product aimed at capturing our interest is called Facebook at Work. Some businesses bar workers from using Facebook openly on the job. Now those individuals actually can use the service, at least for work purposes. Facebook at Work is separate from a user's personal Facebook. So people will need to sign up with the company for a new account. The idea, however, is exactly the same as Facebook: to connect as many users as possible, this time in the workplace. The look and feel of Facebook at Work is just like the old Facebook. There are groups to join, a news feed to read, and instant messaging to stay in contact with coworkers. Naturally, users can add and share comments, photographs, videos, and information about the company and its offices. A connected workplace is a more productive workplace, explains the official Facebook at Work page. Facebook at Work was first announced about 2 years ago. Since then, the company has been testing the service with several large companies. One of those businesses is the Royal Bank of Scotland. Its director of design, Kevin Hanley, told Business Insider the service has been helpful to the bank's 100,000 employees. "I think Facebook lets us communicate, discuss, and solve problems that other solutions, such as email, simply can't." Hanley told the website that within his company, 90% of employees who tried Facebook at Work remained active from month to month. Facebook at Work will be competing with other workplace products or services already in use. These include LinkedIn, Slack, HipChat, Microsoft's Yammer, and Salesforce's Chatter. According to the technology website TechCrunch, Facebook at Work will be launching in London on October 10th. The site said it had seen invitations to the launch event that have been sent out. Facebook has not yet confirmed a date for launching the service. I'm Brian Lynn.
Nearly every day, there is a news story about an attack on members of India's Dalit community. A few days ago, for example, 6 men beat a pregnant Dalit woman and members of her family. Al Jazeera Television said they were attacked for refusing to remove a dead cow from the street. Dalits are members of India's lower caste or social class. The woman's attackers were members of a higher caste. Beatings and other violence against Dalits are not new. What is new, however, is the community's reaction. Recently, Dalits have been protesting in a number of ways. The pregnant woman, for example, is among a growing movement of Dalits who have promised not to clear the streets of dead animals, a job Dalits have long been expected to perform. Other Dalits are taking their protests to the business world. At the end of September, for example, the writer and activist Chandra Ban Prasad launched an online food company. The company prepares and sells grains, pickles, and spices.
For years, Chandra Ban Prasad has fought to end India's caste divisions. He was born 58 years ago into a family of pig farmers in the eastern state of Uttar Pradesh. Prasad grew up experiencing the prejudice of upper caste Hindus against those from lower castes. Historically, Hindu society divided people into four main castes, with Dalits being the lowest. While doing research for the University of Pennsylvania, Prasad was shocked to find 80-year-old Dalits carrying heavy bundles of wheat on their heads and laboring in the fields. He also learned that the grains his community produced and ate were very healthy. For example, when Prasad was a child, millet was a popular grain among the Dalits. Now, health experts are calling millet a superfood. Until recent years, Dalits could not prepare or even touch the food of higher castes or enter their cooking areas. If Dalits touched these foods, the foods became impure. By naming his company Dalit Foods, Prasad is protesting the belief that Dalits are not pure and therefore untouchable. The company has already received orders from a large hotel chain in India, according to Yahoo Finance. By naming his company Dalit Foods, Prasad is protesting the belief that Dalits are not pure and are therefore untouchable. The company has already received orders from a large hotel chain in India, according to Yahoo Finance. If his business is a success, Prasad believes it will support major social changes in India. Younger Dalits will begin believing that the country belongs to them too, he said.
Dalits are victims of thousands of violent attacks every year, according to the Associated Press, or AP, news agency. The Times of India reported that crimes against Dalits rose 19% in 2014. In 1955, India created laws banning abuse and caste discrimination. The country has also established affirmative action programs, such as saving university seats and government jobs for Dalits. But, generally, change remains slow. Although the social position of Dalits has improved over the years, some leaders and police officers still do not enforce laws protecting them. In 2014, for example, The Crime Records Office documented more than 47,000 cases of discrimination at police stations around India, the AP reported. Udit Raj, a member of parliament, said that only 2 to 8% of people accused of crimes against Dalits are found guilty. The AP reported his comment. Raj, who is from New Delhi, is a supporter of expanding rights for Dalits. Caste divisions in India are not as rigid as they once were, partly the result of the country's economic growth over the past several years. New jobs have pulled millions of Indians into large cities where people of all castes live close to one another.
In rural areas, Dalits still suffer from a deep social divide. In villages, for example, lower castes are usually not permitted to enter religious temples or take water from wells. Traditionally, Dalits have been forced to perform the least wanted jobs, such as removing dead animals from roads and cleaning restrooms. Today, many Dalits are still expected to perform these jobs. In August, thousands of members of the Dalit community attended a protest called Dalit Pride March. The protesters promised to stop removing dead animals and doing other dirty jobs. They made the declaration a month after a group of angry higher caste men brutally beat 4 Dalit men in public. The attackers accused the Dalit men of removing the skin from a dead cow. Cows are considered holy in India. Prime Minister Modi has condemned attacks by upper caste men claiming to protect cows. These groups, which have been more active in the past few years, accuse lower castes and sometimes Muslims of killing the animals or eating their meat. Protests have taken place all over Gujarat since the 4 men were beaten, the AP reported. In addition to the refusal to remove dead animals, the protesters want access to land, as most Dalits are landless, according to Al Jazeera.
Bina Palikal is with the National Campaign on Dalit Human Rights. Palikal says the Dalit community has progressed much more slowly than the rest of the country. The biggest problem remains lack of social acceptance of the community. Palikal hopes businesses like Dalit Foods can make a difference. I am looking for a world where I can claim my caste and not be discriminated against, she said. Chandra Ban Prasad recently said that his business is a social experiment to see if India has really changed and to find out if people are willing to examine their own biases and customs. For now, Dalits across India continue to battle social and economic barriers and push for meaningful change. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
This is What's Trending Today. Maria Sharapova will be able to return to competitive tennis next April after the Court of Arbitration for Sport reduced her doping ban from 24 months to 15 months. Sharapova was banned from play after she failed a drug test in January. Tests at the 2016 Australian Open showed she had used meldonium, a banned substance. Meldonium is made in Eastern Europe. It is said to be popular with some athletes from Eastern European countries. The drug is said to increase blood flow. It helps carry oxygen to muscles. Sharapova admitted she had been taking a drug called Mildrenate for over 10 years, but she did not know it was the same as meldonium. The World Anti-Doping Agency banned use of meldonium at the beginning of 2016. At first, the International Tennis Federation banned Sharapova from competitive tennis for 2 years. The ban was to end January 25, 2018. But Sharapova appealed the ruling in the Court of Arbitration for Sport. It ruled on Tuesday to reduce her sentence by 9 months. Sharapova will now be able to play in any event that starts after April 25, 2017. As a result, she could compete at the French Open next May. Sharapova said in a statement that she has gone from one of the toughest days of my career last March, when I learned about my suspension, to now, one of my happiest days, as I found out I can return to tennis in April. And that's What's Trending Today.
It is no surprise that within many education systems, wealthier students often test better than poorer students. To education experts, this is often called the achievement gap. What is a surprise is that in the United States, the achievement gap seems to be closing, at least a little. That result surprised researchers at Stanford University in California. Sean Reardon is a professor of poverty and inequality in education at Stanford. He studied children and how they prepare for kindergarten classes. He also looked at how their preparation has changed since the 1990s. Kindergarten programs are for boys and girls before they enter first grade. At this level, children need to demonstrate simple counting, an ability to listen, and language skills. They need to be able to focus on a project and act responsibly in a classroom. Reardon found that from 1998 to 2010, the achievement gap closed a small amount. He said it was not a huge change. The important thing, he said, is that the gap is closing. One way to reduce the gap is to offer pre-kindergarten programs to very young children. Education experts and some politicians have long pushed for pre-kindergarten classes for all young children. In fact, it has been a promise heard on the political campaign trail. Universal pre-kindergarten classes for all 3- and 4-year-olds. Such classes are already being offered in some areas around the United States, including the U.S. Capitol, Washington, D.C. In fact, education reformers may want to look to Washington as a role model. Vincent Gray is a former mayor of the District of Columbia. When Gray was chairman of the D.C. Council, he wrote the legislation for universal pre-K. His measure gave parents of all children in Washington the choice to begin school at either age 3 or 4.
Well, we've always had some form of early childhood care in the District of Columbia for decades. But what we didn't have was universal access. And I did the legislation in 2009 as chairman of the council to get it done. And then when I became the mayor, when I was sworn in 2011, it gave me an incredible opportunity to be able to fully implement the legislation. And the reason why I did it is because I believed that the opportunity to learn in a formal sense should not wait until the child is 5 years old.
Gray says he made sure the legislation was in effect and fully enforced during his 4 years as mayor. He was defeated for re-election, but is now a candidate for re-election for a seat on the D.C. Council. Today, most of Washington's youngest children are in school. Gray explains that the pre-K programs are not a requirement in the city. Parents can still choose what is best for their family. But many parents are choosing education.
We now have in the District of Columbia, we have over 80% of our three-year-olds that go to school. And I might add, it's not mandatory. You're not required to put your child in school, but virtually no parent at this stage is saying, I don't want my child in school. They want them in school because there's not a cost associated with it other than the cost of them not having the opportunity to learn. And then we have 94% of our four-year-olds who go to school all day. We have essentially reached universality.
Pre-kindergarten classes for 3 and 4 year olds offer hope for many youngsters. It is more than learning the ABCs or counting to 100. These classes give the youngest students the chance to learn how to listen, develop social skills, and interact with others. However, there are theories that say a child does not need schooling at the age of 3 and 4. If we are looking at test results, Finland beats the United States and most other countries in mathematics, reading, and science. Yet, Finnish children do not start school until age 7. Perhaps there is not a one-size-fits-all answer. Perhaps different children need school at different times. Generally, wealthier parents have more financial resources to help their children. Educated parents, wealthy or not, may know how to use the resources that are available to them. For example, they may take their children to free events at a public library or recreation center. Washington, D.C. also has many museums with free admission. Perhaps children who grow up with these types of activities don't need to start attending school at age 3. However, children who are growing up in what Vincent Gray calls socioeconomically challenging situations may not have access to such activities. For some families, he says, starting school at age 3 can be a game changer.
It's especially important for kids who may be the victims of an achievement gap, especially important for kids who are in socioeconomically challenging situations.
Pre-kindergarten classes do more than educate the child. They also bring parents and caregivers into the schools. This point of contact, explains Gray, is a valuable time to educate families. A federal study found that overall, parent involvement increased with such contacts. But it increased even more among low-income parents. It shows schools offer a place where conversations with these parents can happen. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.